Court to proceed to the third case, King versus Consolidated Coal. Mr. Sebastian.
May it please the court. I'm Anthony Sebastian. I represent Jacqueline Keene, the petitioner, the appellee. This case comes before the court on two issues. Whether the Benefits Review Board affirmation of the administrative law judge's decision was an error, and whether the revival of the 15-year presumption that a miner's death was caused by pneumoconiosis warrants a remand to the administrative law, or warrants a remand for further development of evidence consistent with that presumption. With regards to the first issue, the ALJ ignored the scientific literature showing that lung disease suffered by Mr. Keene was caused by coal dust. Instead, the ALJ found that the opinions of the employer's experts were more convincing, even though they were not supported by medical and scientific literature. There is no dispute in the record that Mr. Keene suffered from coal workers' pneumoconiosis. All the experts agreed. There's no dispute that he worked in the appellee's mine for 39 years. Additionally, the ALJ found that the pneumoconiosis did arise from his coal mine employment. The dispute is whether pneumoconiosis was a substantial contributing factor to his death. Claimant's expert, Dr. Perper, found that the extensive interstitial fibrosis, which is scarring, found in Mr. King's lungs was caused by coal dust, and that the scarring was a substantial contributing factor in his death. The employer's experts found the same scarring, but labeled it idiopathic. That is, they couldn't name a reason for the scarring. Dr. Perper supported his findings with medical literature showing a series of scientific studies showing that coal dust can and does cause this exact type of scarring. The administrative law judge ignored these studies and found for the employer. The administrative law judge's decision in this regard was not rational and was not supported by substantial evidence. Therefore, the claim should be remanded for a closer examination of the scarring and its cause. The claim should also be remanded because it falls into the exact type of cases Congress envisioned when it revived the 15-year presumption that a miner's death was caused by pneumoconiosis. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act allows for a rebuttable presumption that a miner's death was caused by a pneumoconiosis if he had worked in the mine for over 15 years and was totally disabled by a respiratory impairment, and if his x-rays were otherwise non-qualifying. Mr. Keene fits all of these prerequisites and deserves to have his case re-examined with the benefit of the presumption.
His case can't get the benefit of the presumption, can it?
I thought only it would be Mrs. Keene's.
The widow's case.
Yes.
There's no question that his claim doesn't get the 15-year
presumption. No, we're not arguing that whatsoever.
Having said that, if you got the 15-year presumption, you'd have a much better case.
That is true, Your Honor. The employer argues, however, that the revival of the presumption is unconstitutional. They claim that as a retroactive legislation, it's a taking under the Fifth Amendment, and that it's a violation of due process. As far as the due process argument, in order to be a violation of due process, the employer must face the heavy burden showing that the legislation has no rational purpose that was related to a legitimate governmental interest. It has been shown that Congress has a legitimate interest in balancing the economic interests of claimants and employers. In order to be constitutional, it is only necessary that there be a conceivable rational purpose. It does not have to be shown that Congress considered the purpose when passing the legislation.
How is this legislation different than the legislation addressed in that Eastern Enterprises versus Apfel case by the Supreme Court back in 1998, which was found to be unconstitutional?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. Moving on to the taking argument, there is no specific test for whether a retroactive legislation is a taking. But the courts have, the claims have evolved to a three-factor inquiry that guides the inquiry. These include the economic impact on the employer in this case, interference with distinct investment-backed expectations, and the character of the governmental action. Looking at the economic impact, while the employer has shown some impact, they've not shown that when looked at in the light of the other two factors that it's sufficient to show attacking. As far as interference with the investment-backed expectations, the employer is aware that all insurance providers must include an endorsement on their policy that makes them liable when amendments to the Black Lung Benefits Act have been made. As far as the character of the governmental action, this action is a strictly economic balancing of the rights of the employers and the claimant. And as an economic act, it's much harder burden to show that a taking has taken place. Because of these reasons, we believe that the claim should be remanded. I think I'll reserve my time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sebastian. Ms. Goldberg.
Excuse me. Thank you.
You ought to be sitting over there.
I'm sorry. The order said that the appellees were on one side. I thought it was divided by appellant, not side.
Your interests are aligned.
Be happy to move.
No, that's all right.
May it please the Court, my name is Jeff Goldberg. I'm representing the Director, Office of Workers' Compensation Programs. I will try not to repeat too much what you heard from Mr. and Mrs. Keene's representative. But I'll begin with one. We have to admit one mistake in our initial brief. We said that if the 15-year presumption were invoked, that Mrs. Keene could rebut it by establishing that the minor's disability was not due to pneumoconiosis. We should have said that she could rebut it by establishing that his death was not due to pneumoconiosis. We apologize. I'll also like to answer the question you asked earlier. How is this case different from Apfel? And it could not be more dissimilar. To begin with, in Apfel, a majority of the court found that the law at issue there did not violate the takings clause. Only four justices found it did. Second, the legislation in Apfel had a 50 to 60-year retroactivity period. Most importantly, Eastern, the party who brought the case in Apfel, put out evidence showing how the legislation would directly affect it. They showed that they were facing a loss of $100 million, and they showed that they had no prior experience with this plan. In this case, however, Consolidation has not developed any evidence at all showing how it itself is going to be directly affected by Section 1556 or by the five-year retroactivity period. They've set out some numbers showing how the industry was affected back when these and other presumptions were in effect in the 1970s, but not how it's going to affect them specifically. They also rely on the 1980 and 1982 General Accounting Office reports that showed the approval rates during that period. Not applicable here. The 1980 report was based on Social Security Administration litigation. Those awards were based, for the most part, some of those were non-adversarial. The initial claims brought before the Social Security Administration were neither the government nor the coal mine operators were permitted to produce any evidence. Others were based on presumptions that were not revived by Section 1556. A 10-year death presumption, a 25-year presumption, the interim presumption, none of those were revived by Section 1556 here. Some of those awards, the GAO report says, were based on evidence that was contradicted by other evidence. Well, of course it is. It's going to be that way. That is the nature of this. It's the judge's job to determine which is more credible. It does not mean the award was not meritorious. Some of those awards were based on non-medical lay evidence. Again, not the case under Section 1556. That part of the law is gone. Those reports, 1980 and 1982, neither of them parsed out the awards based on the 15-year presumption at issue here alone. Continuing, under due process, you heard from Sebastian, as long as Congress had a rational purpose here, then the act's constitutional. Congress did not have to explicitly explain the purpose or even conceive of it. Well, we can conceive of it here. Congress wanted to ease the path to entitlement for certain claimants it thought were likely deserving. And Congress set a 5-year retroactivity period for the simple reason that it was balancing the interests of the claimants and the mine operators and the insurers. The last thing we have, going back to the takings clause, should have mentioned this earlier briefly, sorry, was we pointed out that all of their evidence relates to the older legislation and to the mining industry in general. But this court held in Central State, Southeast, and Southwest versus Midwest Motor Express that the loss at issue must be compared to something in order to assess its impact. The net worth of its company or its total payments under the plan might be good places to start. Midwest, however, has not done this. Well, in this case, Consolidation hasn't done it either. Not one bit of evidence as it relates to that company specifically. They can't complain about insurance premiums because they're a self-insurer. They have done nothing, literally nothing, to show that this act is irrational, is arbitrary, or that it's going to have any sort of negative effect on its company specifically. There are no questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Goldberg. Ms. Introia?
May it please the court, counsels. My name is Sherilyn Trevaya. I'm here on behalf of Consolidation Coal Company. As stated by Mr. Sebastian, there are two issues that are on appeal. When the case was originally appealed from the Benefits Review Board, the only issue was whether the ALJ's denial of benefits in both the miner's claim and the widow's claim was erroneous. Only due to the change in the law while it was on appeal did we suddenly come up with the second issue. With regard to the merits of the claims for Mr. Keene and Mrs. Keene, while the ALJ did have some issues with the fact that Dr. Perper seemed to come up with a new pneumoconiosis, in reality, there were other issues with Dr. Perper's opinion, including the fact that his entire opinion was based on a belief that there was no underlying cardiac condition and Mr. Keene did not die of a massive heart attack. Contrary to Dr. Perper's opinion, the record had voluminous entries related to his congestive heart failure, the cause of his death being a massive heart attack, and all of these cardiac issues, which obviously took away some weight to Dr. Perper's opinion when it was completely rebutted by the medical evidence in the record. The only other opinion in this record that would have supported the claims for the Keens came from the treating physician, Dr. Pineda. And Dr. Pineda's opinion was rejected by the ALJ due to the fact that he changed his mind. He was extremely equivocal. He said it was this at one point, it was coal dust at this point, it was cardiac at that point. The bottom line was, even if he had been given greater weight, Dr. Pineda's opinion in all reality would not have helped the claimant or the surviving widow's claim, because first and foremost, Dr. Pineda found that the disability that he saw in Mr. Keene may have occurred whether or not he'd ever worked in a mine, and he said the exact same thing with regard to Mrs. Keene's claim, which that while the COPD may have been a cause of the death, it did not hasten it. And in our brief, it recites exactly what Dr. Pineda talked about with regard to the heart attack. It was absolutely massive. It affected two other organ systems. Once the organ systems failed, there was no way that Mr. Keene was going to survive, regardless of any other factor in his life. So for those reasons, we believe that the ALJ's decision denying benefit in both the miner's claim as well as the survivor's claim is supported by substantial evidence and should be affirmed as a denial of benefits in both cases. Now, the fact that Mrs. Keene's claim was denied puts us in a very interesting position, given the fact that none of this was before any of the lower courts. With that said, if Mrs. Keene's claim is entitled to the reinvoked presumption found at 1556, she would be entitled to the presumption of, assuming 15 years is not really going to be an issue, I don't think with 39 we're going to get there. But if the disability or the death was due to pneumoconiosis, then she's going to if the total disability is found to be the cause of the pneumoconiosis, she would be entitled to an award of benefits, contrary to what we have just seen based on the evidence where clearly the death was found to not be due to pneumoconiosis, which kind of puts us in a quandary looking at the...
presumption's pretty powerful.
Yes, it is, because the ultimate question of fact here has been determined. His death was not due to pneumoconiosis, yet we're going to award benefits because he worked in a mine for a certain number of years. And while I appreciate the fact that Mr. Goldberg has said that the findings in the GAO reports from 1980 and 1982 do not specifically only address the presumptions, he's correct. They do not. There were numerous problems with the use of the presumptions, and the underlying basis for the ultimate removal of the presumptions from the Act are seen in those two documents. Specifically, when you start talking about whether this is a due process problem or a takings problem, the first question you have to get into is was there a legitimate legislative purpose furthered by rational means? We don't even have a purpose. Okay, we've got a statement by a senator 2 days after this law was enacted saying we're going to make this easier for people to get their claims awarded. Okay, assuming that would even qualify, the problem you get into is that when you reinvoke these presumptions, you are now moving yourself beyond the purpose of the Act, which is set forth in Section 901A, which is to award benefits to minors who are totally disabled due to pneumoconiosis or to the spouses of minors whose deaths were due to pneumoconiosis. And when we put the report as an exhibit, and if you read what the GAO found out, what they found was that 88.5% of the claims when the first report came out in 1980 that were awarded probably shouldn't have been. It gets worse, because even though the percentage drops in the 1982 version of it, it goes to 84.5. The problem you get into is that even more of them were based on the presumptions. And if you look at what is listed as Appendix 3 in that GAO report, which specifically A76 in our appendix, there was a study that was done. And there were approximately 200 minors, and they were all reviewed, had medical evidence reviewed over in West Virginia. And of these 200 claimants, they essentially came to find out that 8 should have been entitled to benefits based on the medical data found from West Virginia. That's what they found. 8 of these people should have been awarded benefits. When they went back to see who got awarded benefits under the system as it was with presumptions and the interims and all of these things, basically 97 of them had been awarded. 97 when only 8 qualified under the medical criteria. And this was the basis of the GAO's report saying, look, we have the medical tools to determine if these people are disabled.
But it's a very difficult, sorry for interrupting,
that's okay.
But it's a very difficult proof problem, very difficult medical issue. Can't Congress shift the burden in the proof in deciding that the cost of the proof or the difficulty of the proof is just too great?
I don't think that there's a difficulty of proof when you're given a free exam. And each one of these minors is afforded a free X-ray, a free pulmonary function test, a free arterial blood test, an examination by a physician, and a report is written.
Yes.
I think it's somewhat easier for them to prove a case than people in other situations trying to obtain disability benefits.
But making the ultimate proof is difficult. The exams can be done and so forth, but proving the pneumoconiosis and the causation is something that eludes even the physicians, even the pathologists that make the examinations.
Well, I mean, the burden of proof, they are the ones who are receiving a benefit. Okay, and in all honesty, there is, you know, the great majority of legislation that allows people to obtain benefits from a private company or even the government, those parties are required to make a burden of proof.
If the proof isn't that difficult, why is the shift to you of the disproof that difficult? In other words,
because you can't disprove a negative. And that is the ultimate problem. And as mentioned in our brief, when you start addressing regulations where we now have legal pneumoconiosis and you have obstructive conditions that can be caused due to coal dust and or cigarette smoking, and the physicians are saying, hey, we can't tell which it is, so it all must be a part of it. I mean, basically, you can't get around this problem. And it's not so much a burden of proof. The burden of proof is that you have to prove that you're totally disabled. And there's numbers. If your numbers are below the qualifying levels of value or the values that are listed, you're eligible. And that was what the point of this was. It was supposed to be values of people who were totally disabled. These were values that everybody decided were sufficient to make a finding of total disability. And if you weren't below those values and you didn't have a physician come in and say, hey, you're totally disabled, you weren't supposed to get the benefits. And that's exactly what this says. All these people got benefits that just basically bankrupted the system. And to find that this change in the statute, to go back to something that we already know is fiscally irresponsible, it is completely contravened by medical data, it is arbitrary and irrational, which is the requirements for due process. And when you get into taking and how much money these people are going to have to pay, assuming these claims are all awarded, which we don't have data, this just the law just came out, so there's no way to know how bad it's going to be. But it's the fact of we're going to go back to a system that clearly failed. I mean, these pages show failure upon failure. They have examples of who got awarded benefits and how bad it was. And that's
so
why they went out.
So Congress passed a law that's unwise. So what's new? That happens all the time.
What's new is that you're allowed to get away with that once. But when you're going to do it a second time, then you can't get around it. And our Supreme Court in Usury v. Turner said, hey, there seems to be some connection here between the 10 to 15 years. You know, it seems reasonable. We got some medical, some scientific data. It's good to spread the cost around to the people who were hiring them. You know, it all makes sense. It really does. Until real facts come pouring in and show the absolute ridiculousness of reinvoking presumptions, which clearly award benefits to people who are not entitled to them. And if the underlying purpose of this act is to be awards for total disability and death due to pneumoconiosis, reinvoking the presumptions will remove us from the scope and the purpose of this act, as seen by the numerous pages in those reports. And for
is Congress perhaps redefining total disability by this presumption?
They did not do that, Your Honor. And that's the problem we get into. We are looking at Section 1556 of a giant piece of legislation, which, you know, we don't know if the people there, besides Senator Byrd, I'm sure he knew, that even knew what was in there. And you get into this, was it discussed? And we put in the legislative history for the first two go-arounds, and you can see all the times where it was debated and discussed and how they eventually came to where they wanted to be. We don't have that here. We don't know what the problem was that needed to be solved by amending the Act.
The industry didn't seek to impact this legislation? Perhaps you don't
I don't know that anybody – I did not know it was in until it all came out. And I don't know if the industry did or not. I can't speak for the industry. So, you know, if
I thought perhaps you just might have taken judicial notice of other counsel or that it it's a big piece of legislation. So, and of course, Senator Byrd would be uniquely one who would be interested in because of the demographics of his.
I don't really know that the legislation was available for everyone to know exactly what was in it prior to the time that it was actually signed, because there was an issue, as and I do know that, you know, just my own knowledge, that there were issues with people not knowing what exactly was in the bill before they were signing it. That was one of the issues when they were trying to get it passed.
You wouldn't question that Congress could insert a presumption. You may have said it was unwise in the past, and obviously you feel it's
I think
unwise now, but are you saying they can't place that presumption in this kind of legislation?
I think they can place a presumption if, number one, they have data, excuse me, if they had data that contradicted all of this, and that now this we have a new presumption, not this one that didn't work, and we all know it failed, but we found this other presumption which will work, then that might work. But if you look at usury, and basically it is at 26 in that decision. They get into, we might face a more difficult problem in applying the presumption, and they start going into this, and it talks about awards of benefits for people who were not qualified to receive them. And in all honesty, that's exactly what happened here. I mean,
is your argument in part that an ALJ wouldn't know how to input the presumption?
That the ALJ would not know how to...
Well, I mean, when determining the factual basis of whether you're disabled, how does an ALJ work with the presumption?
Well, if you don't mind me speaking outside of the record, basically, in the cases that have been coming down since this, they look at the PFTs, if the PFTs show total disability, if the ABGs show total disability. There is a poor pulmonary presumption, and there is the medical opinion disability that is incorporated into this.
Well, this gets back, if I may, to my question of are they redefining disability? Isn't Congress perhaps saying if you have a certain tenure in the mines, there's a likelihood you're disabled? Is that the thrust of this legislation?
I think
it's back to how unwise or wise it may be, but once you build a issue of time into what would otherwise be a purely medical, so-called objective analysis, haven't you perhaps changed the focus of disability or what constitutes?
Yeah, you've turned it into a pension plan. You worked in the coal mines for 15 years. You're entitled to benefits because you're totally disabled. I mean, that's exactly what the GAO found. It's more of a pension plan. It's not a disability plan. There's no reason why these people cannot show that they are disabled. There's no reason why these people can't show that the death was due to pneumoconiosis. All the presumptions did that they could possibly do would make it easier for somebody to be awarded benefits, which would be an admirable thing to have happen if those claimants should have been receiving benefits in the first place. Unfortunately, the legislative history shows that they were awarding them to people who should not have been awarded benefits, which is why the presumption should not have been reinvoked under 14th or the 5th, and I'm not going to get into all of them since I'm obviously out of time, unless there's any other questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
I'd like to start by addressing the merits. The testimony of Dr. Perper wasn't completely rebutted. It was ignored. The administrative law judge did not address the scientific literature. And if the treating physician had changed his mind and that was enough to discredit his opinion, then more weight should have been given and more examination should have been given to the rest of the medical record, including Dr. Perver's. As far as the presumption, and this is indeed a powerful presumption, but I think the fact that all the presumptions involved weren't revived is fatal to the irrationality argument. This is a balancing by Congress. The fact that Congress did not resurrect all the prior provision indicates that they're refining. They are trying to find a balance. And if under the prior provisions, if one person who was disabled did not get their get benefits because of it, then Congress has a rational reason to revive the presumption. And if Congress wanted to make a pension plan, they could. Thank you, Your Honor, unless there's another question.
Thank you. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.